Amen. We've been talking about chasing the promise of God, chasing the promise of God. We've been in this for a little while now, what it is to chase after what God has for us. Namely, that his kingdom is coming into our world and we're to chase after it. It's a kingdom of healing, of freedom and salvation. And we're called to chase after it. Well, as we look at Joshua today, as he's going to cross over the Jordan River and take this thing called the Promised Land. And we've been making that comparison of Joshua taking the Promised Land and us taking the promise of God that he has for us. Well, last week I told you about my first car. My first car being a Daewoo Lanus. I was asked that again today. What was it? It was a Daewoo Lanus. Yeah, they make like refrigerators and equipment for like lifters and all kinds of weird things, but they stopped making cars a long time ago. One trip in particular, especially in college when I had this car, I wanted to save money, right? I had to do it on a budget. I didn't really have a lot of money. And so gas was limited. And I wanted to save money by gathering points. I'm a points person, right? So petrol points were my thing back then. I don't know what happened to them, but whatever. Anyway, petrol points were my thing. So I needed to go to petrol stations. So I was catching petrol stations, petrol Canada stations all the way across Canada. And in particular, in Northern Ontario. If you've ever traveled in Northern Ontario, especially, there's these signs. There's these signs that look kind of like this, where it'll come up, where there's the last gas signs, right? Where it's like there's no more gas for 381 kilometers. This is one of the largest ones in Canada. Where there's a stretch of road. There's one in Labrador, and there's one in up in Northern Ontario as well that's pretty large, where when you go, the sign says this. It's like, you better fill up now, right? So it wasn't quite 381 kilometers. Mine was probably around the 200 kilometer mark. And I'm like, I look down at my gauge. I'm like, that's pretty low right now. But this isn't a Petro, right? This isn't a Petro Canada. It was an Esso or something. Like, I'm going to go because I know there's a Petro Canada up here and 200 kilometers away. I'm like, I'm gonna risk it, right? I'm going to risk it. And so I'm driving down the road, and like pretty much as soon as I said I'm going to risk it, my gas light comes on. And I'm like, if I turn around right now, can I make it back, right? Like, I'm not sure if I can make it back now to that gas station. I'm going to keep going. And so I'm going, but as I drive, I'm like, I'm going to run out of gas. So I slow down to try to improve my gas miles. I don't know if that actually works or not, but I was going 80 on a 100-kilometer highway, and I'm cruising through, and I'm sweating. Like, I start to sweat, and my nerves were, like, getting to me as I'm driving. I was by myself in this time, and I go, and I just remember the feeling of finally pulling up to the gas station and thinking, like, how in the world did I make it? Like, these reserve tanks are massive on these cars, in this little tiny car. It had to be the Lord, right? I was running low on fuel, and I just ran like that. Well, maybe for you, you don't relate to that. Maybe you don't even drive a car, but have you ever run low on food? You know what I mean? Like, where you go through the day and you realize, wow, I haven't eaten today. And the only reason you recognize, well, for me anyway, is I begin to shake, right? I'm shaking. I'm like, I've gone through three meetings, and I'm like, all I have is caffeine in my system right now. I should probably eat some food so I can focus and get through my day. We get low on fuel. We run low on fuel in our souls as well. As we chase after God, as we chase after the promises, as we get busy in our world with school, with leisure, with work, with family, we get low on fuel. We do. If we're not constantly filling up our souls, we run low. Our fuel gauge comes on, maybe even, and we're just like, I can just make it, right? I'll just make it another week before I start paying attention to God in my life, or before I start filling up my soul again with Jesus. We run low on fuel to chase the promise. And sometimes we just stop altogether. We don't even care about our souls anymore. I just need to get through life, right? Have you been in those moments? Have you been in those moments where you just want to get through life and you're so low on fuel? I think there's a couple reasons why we get to this moment that Joshua, these couple chapters in Joshua brings out, and they're this. We get low on fuel to chase the promise because we forget to let God be God, and we forget what he has done. We forget to let God be God, and we forget what he has done. So we're going to go through Joshua and break it down what's going on here and to bring out these two points for us this morning. So in Joshua chapter 3, verses 1 to 6, early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before the crossing over of that river, right? After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your position and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you've never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." Joshua said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people." So they took it up and went ahead of them. I love this language that he uses. I love the language that Joshua uses, that he says, "The Lord will do wonders among you." To get ready. You see this thing called the Ark of the Covenant, right? The Ark of the Covenant, which roughly looks something maybe like this. But the Ark of the Covenant was filled with the law, the Old Testament, these tablets of stone that God etched in the law. It was in here. Aaron had a staff that budded, and it was in here as well. And what this Ark of the Covenant represented was actually God's presence. God's presence was said to sit between those two angels, those cherubim that are there. His presence was set to go there. And as you read the Old Testament, you'll notice where the Ark of the Lord was, that's where the favor of God was. They would win battles, or their God would give provisions because his presence was there, his blessing was there as well. So it's no wonder here that the officers went ahead and God told Joshua, like, send the ark first. Send the ark first. The ark was the first thing to come to the waters of the Jordan River. And it was the first thing really that went into battle every time they went. When normally, right, normally when you think of battle, why don't you send to the commander of the armies first? Well, the trick to that is Israel is sending the commander first. It's God's presence. It's who he is. The Ark of the Covenant was the presence of God that Joshua sent before them. Before anything, before they even left. And in fact, they actually traveled, it said 1,000 yards, 100 yards, what, I forget what it says now, 1,000 yards behind it, knowing that the presence of God is so holy and before them. And the question, of course, is why? And it becomes this, right? They were declaring that God was the one who is going to bring the victory. God was the one who is going to bring a miracle. And there's actually a third thing here that I hadn't really known before, but listen to McConville and Williams. They say this: the divine presence is a theme in both war and religion. Paramount here, it seems, is the connection between the ark and the law of Yahweh. Yahweh is God's name. When the ark crosses the Jordan, not only is it symbolic of Yahweh's victory over the peoples and gods of Canaan, but also of the connection between the land and the law. Listen to this statement: the occupation and tenure of the land will be in accordance with the law given in the making of the covenant. So God's presence was going to the river Jordan, and we already know what happens, right? When they step water in the Jordan River, a miracle happens and they walk across on dry ground. So they know without a shadow of a doubt, they know for sure, for certain, that it's actually God, it's Yahweh, God, the Lord, who brings this miracle about. They know that he's the one that's going to bring the victory in the promised land. There's people there, right? There's people there occupying the land. But God goes first and brings the victory. But the third thing is really important that I hadn't thought about before, and it's this, is when he sent the ark ahead, it was to declare too that this is God's land. This land belongs to God, and we're going to follow him according to his laws. It's his. It's his. God's presence is the one doing it. Excuse me. In verses 7 and 8, we see that the Lord said Joshua is going to be exalted And then verse 9, it says, Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you. Now, he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. So choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe, which he brings up later. And as soon as the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand into a heap. I want you to notice two things. The first one is this. Joshua says, come and listen to the Lord. Come and hear the plan. Here's the strategy. Here's the plans that God has. He could have done something completely different. He could have said, come, I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'll tell you what's going to happen. Joshua, right? He was the one trained for battle. He was the one trained for this survival and military excursion they were on. But he didn't. He said, come and listen to the Lord. I found that intriguing. Secondly, though, notice how he addresses God. He doesn't necessarily call him Lord here. He calls him the living God is among you. Especially in this time, there were a lot of gods who weren't living, right? They were maybe like a statue who was worshipped or an idol that was worshipped. But Joshua in this time says, come, the living God, the God of all creation and all history is going to do a great work for you. He's living and he's with you. And actually, he's going before you. It's he who's giving the victory. I find that intriguing. It was going to be pretty obvious whose work this was. It's going to be unmistakable. Then we see how it happened. Then we see that this great miracle happened. It says, when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. This is really important. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled in a heap a great distance away in a town called Adam, in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the sea, the salt sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. And they stood firm on dry ground in the middle of Jordan while everyone passed by on dry ground. I find this whole miracle pretty intriguing. So the town of Adam is about 32 kilometers approximately from where the Israelites were camped out and where they probably would have crossed. And where they probably would have crossed would have been a pretty thin part of the Jordan, where any other time of the year, it would have been pretty simple to just ford the river, to get across it. And maybe that was their plan until God said, I'm actually going to let you go across on dry ground. It's really important to remember, too, that it's flooded. These banks are flooded. So it's not simply this one little strip anymore, but in springtime especially, this river floods, and it's really harsh, actually. Really harsh. I think I have a little video to kind of show you a little bit of what this is. This is kind of a picture of it, of the Jordan in flood season. So it's not maybe very far across, but they're going to show a video of this flood. This is during flooding season, how intense it could be. Last year, there was a flood in the Jordan. 21 people died because of the flooding of the Jordan River. This wasn't an easy thing maybe to cross this Jordan, except what God did is he actually took himself, his presence, and the priest came and he stepped at the front of the river and their toes dipped in. And as that happened, God put that water up into a heap at this town called Adam. In 1927, I found this really cool. In 1927, an earthquake occurred around the Jordan. There was a landslide. The landslide blocked the Jordan River for 21 hours. And apparently, from what I was understanding, is this can happen fairly often, you know, every maybe 100 or 50 years or something like that where it's blocked. But the big time it happened was in 1927. I don't know how it happened for Joshua, whether it was a landslide, whether it was just God putting his hand up and forcing the waters to stand in a heap. Both are pretty miraculous. Because what I understand is this, at the right moment, at the right time, God was faithful to his promise. He didn't only give the strategy, but he made a way. He didn't only give a strategy, he made a way. He made the way for them to get across. He did this great act among them. I find it intriguing what God tells Joshua to do next, though. Because I think our biggest problem when God does something amazing in our lives, and God knew it for Joshua and the Israelites too, is we forget. We forget what God does in our lives. Last week, I told you a story of my mom being healed from cancer. I always forget that story. I just forget that it happens, and I don't know why, and then I think about it again. I'm like, wow, God is faithful to his promise. He's faithful to who he is. So God knew this for Joshua. So he calls them to set up a memorial. A memorial so that they will remember. And that's what chapter 4 is all about. They were to take 12 stones, one from each tribe of Israel, to represent the unity of Israel. And they brought them out of the Jordan and took them to this camp at Gilgal, and they set it up. And I want you to hear some of the words again of why they did this and why God and Joshua did this in this moment. The priests came up in verse 18 in chapter 4, out of the river, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran at flood stage as before. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal in the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones that had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God, Yahweh your God, dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. This is the second time he says this. He says it earlier on as well, where he says, when your children ask, tell them, God did this great miracle for us. This memorial, this thing that was set up, these stones were meant to point back so that when you, if you have kids now or in the future, when you have kids, you could be able to say, look back and say, hey, look what God had done. God knows how we just forget. He knows. And he knew how Joshua and the Israelites would forget. In fact, at the end of Joshua, when you go into this book called Judges, it even says right there in the beginning of Judges, they forgot Joshua's generation. They forgot all about God. Isn't that incredible? Memory and reflection and recall on what God has done is actually really, really important. It's really, really important. A sign of memorial does this. It points to the generations to come, to the children. And notice a little bit later in 24, it says this. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know, that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of Yahweh, the Lord, is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. So it does three things. It passes it on to the generation. It's set up so that the entire world would know. Hey, what are those stones? Oh, well, I've heard that. It's the strength of the Lord. And the third thing is so that the people would always fear God, respect him and follow him all the days of their life. A memorial is meant to draw people to worship. Draw people to worship. It's meant to point them to this, to worship that of God, that it wasn't Joshua, it's not Moses, it's not my own might who gets me through the next day, but it's to point us back to God and to worship him, to come to a moment where if you have something set up, maybe it's a sticky note, right? And you just have this sticky note on your computer desk and it just reminds you, oh yeah, God did this for me. Thank you, God. That's worship. That's a moment of worship that draws our attention back to who he is. Back in the 90s, it was pretty hilarious. I think culture took this to a little bit of an extreme where we had bracelets. Does anybody remember this? WWJD, right? And like Christian print became a whole like, I don't know, kingdom of paraphernalia that we would wear to represent God, right? And we'd say we were showing it to our friends or whatever, or we'd wear things to remember what God has done. Maybe one of the main things, you know, like cross necklaces became like a massive thing, right? That's like we just wore all these things and we began to produce it. But of course, the danger in that is it became just all about money, right? It became all about show. And that's one of the things when we set up memorials for ourselves can do is it can become about money. It can become a God in our lives as well. When we set up things for ourselves, I think it's really important. I think a physical thing draws our mind back to God in a way that maybe we can't. Like you go to a cafe and you had a really important conversation, maybe with your spouse, with a friend there. So when you go by that cafe, you feel it. You're like, wow, like that was really important, right? It was really important. Or you go past your old school, university, and you just remember the good old days, right? You feel that when you go by those physical things. They mean something. Of course, they can be taken too far, which you find in Judges, that they just begin to worship idols. And we worship other things besides God. A memorial is meant to draw people back to worship of God. And secondly, it fuels us for the promise for years to come. So when I look back at that memorial, I'm like, wow, God is good, right? I can make it to tomorrow. I can make it this next step. Because I don't know how you enter each and every day. But I know if you have a moment with God where you're remembering what he's done, it fuels you for the promise. It fuels you to get through today, to not just get through, but to meet with God today. And let him restore a little bit more of who you are. It fuels us for the promise for years to come. It's also a claim. When they set up this memorial, it was a claim. It wasn't simply a memorial to remind us, but a claim of what is to come. Israel set up these 12 stones, and I imagine when the enemy looked at it, they're like, okay, what does this mean, right? It was kind of like a flag. You know, when especially in the conquering days of the world, when people would go set a flag, it meant this is my territory, right? When we the earth landed on the moon, of course, our American brothers and sisters decided it was a good idea to put the flag on the moon, right? And it wasn't a world flag, it was the American flag, right? We do this all around the world. There's some fun stories. It's kind of like a flag, knowing it's a claim that God, this is God's territory, this is God's land, and he's taking it. Listen to this from McConville and Williams. He says, it is, of course, a memorial of something that has happened, and as such belongs squarely with the important Old Testament tradition of remembering as an act of worship and formation. Okay, at the same time, it contains a promise, since it marks the claim to the land made in this formative moment by Yahweh. There's something really important about putting God before you. There's something really important about setting up these things to help us remember God's faithfulness. Because the reality is, God is faithful. We just need to ask ourselves, how has he been faithful? It's important because we lose steam. We lose steam to actually follow after God. We can become complacent or even bored as we open the Bible and read scripture and we're like, I'm just not getting it today. I'm not getting it this week. I'm not getting it this year. I'm not growing right now. And we get frustrated and we get bitter. And we get bitter against the church. We get bitter against ministries. We get bitter against people. Why? Because we're losing steam and we're becoming stagnant Christians. Our souls become stagnant. Do you see the importance of putting God first in front of us and of setting up these memorials for ourselves. We need to be reminded over and over again that God is faithful to his promise. God is faithful. We need to let God be God, and we need to remember what he's done. We need to ask ourselves a couple questions here as we come to the end. And I'm going to give you a chance to pray these. We need to first put God before us. And the question to ask this really is, who's in charge of my freedom? Or like, when I make a plan for my life, who am I listening to? I mean, it's important to listen to parents. It's important to listen to some voices to give you wisdom and mentorship. But am I listening to the voice of the Lord as well? Am I putting him before my decisions? When I want to conquer some habit in my life, am I sending God out before like Joshua did? Saying, God, it has to be you that does it. When I want to get through this painful next experience or a hard conversation, am I sending God out before to split the Jordan, to put it up in a heap and allow us to cross? Are we sending him out before? As we chase the promise of God, it is paramount that his presence is always before us. We need to put him in that position in our lives. Not simply it's on Sundays, not simply when we meet together as fellowships or small groups, but it's the hard grind of life. We got to set him before it. Our prayer in that moment needs to be something like, God, help me to send you out before me instead of charging my own way. Or maybe it's right now you need to say, God, I send you out. It's your work. My life is yours. I send you out before me. Of course, the second thing in our passage was to remember. To remember. What are some things you can do to help remember? But I think we need to come to this question is, what do you do? What is your practice when you see God do something in your life? What do you do? What do we set up to make things happen? How do we remember? How do we testify to our children, or our friends, or our community that we're with? How are we remembering and setting up things for ourselves so that it can fuel us to chase day after day? The prayer could be, God, would you bring to mind something from my past where you showed up? Because we forget. And God, what should I put in place? Maybe it's a simple sticky note. Maybe it's a rock that reminds you of something. I don't know. I don't know what it could be for you. Be creative with it. But set things up so we can remember. Well, what we're going to do today is actually come to communion. And it's like one of the great markers that we'd use to remember, because Jesus passed this on. Jesus passed this on. It's a great marker of remembrance, and it's a great way to reinstate God's grace into our lives. To recognize that he's the one that does the work. It's he who's brought us in and given us salvation and healing and freedom. So before we come to that, why don't you take a moment with this slide here and maybe ask God some questions today to do business with the Lord in these two areas. Let me pray for you and let you do that as we come to the communion table.